Welcome to the Smichael Speaks podcast channel. I'm Joanne Smichael, and I'm delighted that you tuned in for relevant leadership learning that will help you continue to soar. Enjoy this episode. I had a really interesting coaching session yesterday, and it verified something that most of us know, and that is that you don't know a person's entire story, and it takes a lot of trust for them to really reveal more of themselves. This client that revealed more of herself is active in promoting DEI at her organization. She's the VP in charge of those efforts. She's also Jewish. She's a mom. She's a Latina. She's married. She's an urban dweller. And she's an activist. She's also proud to be a liberal Democrat. She is deeply, deeply, deeply troubled by the ongoing conflict between Israel and Palestine. She's also deeply troubled by the rise in anti-Semitism that she's experiencing firsthand. It's not something she's reading about in the paper. She's experiencing it. So all that's very interesting, but more interesting is the fact that she's married to a very conservative man who denies the existence of threats to Jews or other marginalized groups. She's supporting Biden and he's supporting Trump. As we kept talking, and as my eyes got, I don't know, big as flying saucers, but as we kept talking and she continued to share, she says she's done a lot of soul searching to decide if she could stay in a marriage with a man whose views are so different from hers. And she acknowledges that he and his family support things and people she absolutely doesn't believe in. I had to ask her, what is the glue? Why are you staying? And I was surprised when she said that they had shared values. She said they both prioritize family. She said they both want the nation to prosper, though they see really different routes to that prosperity. She said they both believe deeply in God, even though he's a Christian and she's a Jewish person. She said they both prioritize health. They both prioritize service to the disadvantaged. And she said they both prioritize peace. And that's the focus of this podcast, prioritizing peace. So I asked her, how do people from totally different philosophical positions prioritize peace? And she was telling me, she said, it hasn't always been that way, but eventually they decided to stop worrying about politics. And that was a conscious decision that they made. They established new ground rules for discussion. They could not pretend that these very fundamental differences didn't exist. And they also couldn't pretend that the differences weren't becoming more and more problematic in their relationship. So the first ground rule that they established was listening and learning. Both of them committed to hearing each other out without interrupting and learning about the other person's perspectives. It also meant that they had to gain knowledge, real knowledge, about the other person's perspectives. That meant she had to watch Fox News and he had to watch some CNN, and they both watched the BBC together. It also meant that they both had to read books that captured the opposing views. And she said this was hard work because it challenged them and it challenged what they believed to be true. The next ground rule that they established was no labeling. And that meant that neither could label the other's views. For instance, she couldn't call him a closeted bigot because his conservative views looked like bigotry to her, and he had to stop calling her a secret socialist. Once they put the labels away, once they learned to listen and committed to expanding their knowledge base, they found they could engage in dialogue that was respectful. But it also showed that they're both intellectually curious people who both want peace. They want peace in their home, in their community, in our country, and in our world. This idea of prioritizing peace is complex. It's very complex. And that's because there's so many notions of what peace looks like. We're taught to compete and to win. And we experience a lot of discord in our daily lives. You know, we can get really swamped up by the troubles that we witness on the news, that we witness firsthand. I was really sad. Our pastor determined that our church needed to have active intruder training for all of the members. And that came as a result of some potentially threatening behavior on a Sunday morning. I don't want to go into the details of what happened that Sunday morning, but the perceived threat was sufficient to make our pastor take decisive action. We're a small congregation in a small community, and we need to know how to protect ourselves from violence. And that breaks my heart. It really does. In spite of everything that happens, we can be intentional peace seekers. It starts with what I mentioned earlier, defining what peace means to you. It may mean something very different than it does to me. For some people, it means the absence of conflict. For others, it's the end of all violence. For others, it's a mental state of internal harmony. So think about it. What does peace mean to you? What does it mean to you? Once you've kind of firmed up your own notion of peace, you got to figure out how to take it from thought to deed. Those deeds can include something as simple as a random act of kindness, you know, carrying the groceries for somebody, picking up somebody's check at the diner, you know, paying a toll for the car behind you, stopping to have a conversation with a service worker or somebody you may not ordinarily acknowledge or not even see. Making peace a reality can take on other forms. I met an activist on my recent trip to Portugal. She said she lends her voice through her social media and her participation in gatherings and in organized events focused on humanity. She is a psychologist by training, so she also does interventions in organizations that need help creating collaboration, teamwork, communication, those things. She does something else that I benefited from and that I think is interesting. On occasion, she gives guided tours with the intent of educating, not about highlighting tourist attractions. Her tours explore the nuances of oppression, colonization, and how to move beyond that stuff to creating bonds of shared humanity. So, what else can we do to prioritize peace? Think about the organizations you belong to. Your church, your synagogue, your mosque, your sorority, you know, your whatever, wherever you belong. Think about those organizations. Are they inclusive? Are multiple perspectives and views invited? If the answer is no, find organizations that bring people from different worlds together. Consider something like the National Conference of Christians and Jews. Now, it's now called the National Conference for Community and Justice. It's an organization that was founded in 1927, and it was founded because of the anti-Semitism and anti-Catholicism that became really painfully apparent when Al Smith ran for president. The purpose of NCCJ is to fight bias, bigotry, bullying, oppression, discrimination, and racism in America. They do really interesting stuff. They provide consulting to organizations. They offer youth enrichment programs. They offer education for adults. They've got events and volunteer opportunities. There's all sorts of resources on their website, and that's nccj.org. NCCJ is all about prioritizing peace. Have you ever heard of the Purple Nation? I heard Michael Steele give a commencement address, and he was the first person I ever heard talk about Purple Nation. It's an organization that's, if you don't know who Michael Steele is, he was the lieutenant governor of Maryland. He's a Republican, and he served under Robert Ehrlich. So Purple Nation is cool. It's an organization that's committed to merging the red and the blue to cultivate common ground for Americans. Their goal is to get Democrats and Republicans working together to find and to create solutions. Solutions for America and for the larger world. Now, you know, of course, they have candidates that they endorse, but look past that and explore their resource page. The resource page is, to me, the most valuable thing on their site. And their site is purplenationusa.org. My point here is that the more we know about people with seemingly opposite views, the more we grow. I'm also stressing the value of learning about organizations that don't have a dog in the fight other than wanting to create peace in different ways and in different areas of society. Ooh, there's one more organization I'm intimately familiar with because I was a member for lots of years, and that's the League of Women Voters. It was founded in 1920, is a nonprofit, nonpartisan organization. It is not bipartisan, it is nonpartisan. This means that they take a neutral stance. They provide voting tools, voter registration, and voter education. And they use these tools to engage the citizenry and to defend democracy and to educate all of us. You know, another one is the World Peace Initiative. I like this group because the focus is on the individual. Their premise is that you cannot create peace around you until you create peace within you. They offer mediation, they do online training, they do retreats, they do corporate training. I think it's worth the time to check out their website for tools that you can use to create that peace within. A lot of their stuff is going to help you to be creative in ways to create peace in your home, your community, your world, and it's WPIFoundation.org. And that's a good lead in to what I'm going to talk about next. Most of what I've mentioned were about big picture things. I want to look at individual ways that we can prioritize peace in our lives. Well, become a peacemaker internally by wrestling through the difficult issues you're harboring about the other. Can be the other politically, racially, socioeconomically, nationally, gender identity. All of the others that we've formed constructs about need to be examined. So identify your prejudices, the forms that those prejudices are taking. I mean, how they're manifesting themselves. Think about why they're a part of you and then work on releasing them. One of the things that the woman I was talking about said is that her relationship with her husband and his family has helped her stop demonizing Republicans and conservatives. She said she's able to see them more fully as human beings who just have another worldview. She's also been able to find common ground in terms of their values, even though their political beliefs are miles and miles and miles apart. Another important message I got from her is how important it is to love and not control. She was trying to control his beliefs, and he was trying to control hers. We got to recognize that we have the power over ourselves, and that's the most important power. It's not meant to be used to control or manipulate other people to believe what we believe. Instead, we've got the opportunity to create affirming relationships that let people be themselves, that let people be their whole selves. When we allow folks to be themselves, we can accept them in their totality as human beings. That doesn't mean we have to adopt their beliefs. It does mean that we can tolerate different perspectives. And it's acceptance and tolerance that move us away from constantly being on a campaign to change other people's minds and hearts. I think in these affirming relationships, we begin to accept the rights of others, the right to believe what they believe, to think what they think. One of the personal strategies for creating peace is really about forgiveness. What are you harboring? Who do you want to get back at? When revenge, getting even, and one-upsmanship invade our lives, they deny us of the opportunity to be peaceful within. They misdirect our energy. I got a question for you. What are you reading? What are you reading? What are you watching? Are you reading books about peace? Are you watching movies or documentaries focused on peace? Begin changing what you absorb. Refocus your attention by reading and watching things that enhance your skills as a peacemaker. All right, I'm going back to the broader picture. There are little things that just about anybody can do in their community. And I know some of them are going to sound trite and silly, but they're little things that can move us forward to peace. Even the little ones bring people together and create connections instead of divides. And so many options. I'm just going to mention two. One of the small things are block parties. Have a block party to really meet your neighbors. I am astounded by how many people don't know their neighbors. You live on the same street. You live in the same apartment complex. You live in the same condo development. How can you not know one another? How can you not know one another? Another thing you can do is organize a food drive for a local shelter. You can do highway or road cleanup teams. You can create community gardens. Do anything that builds camaraderie, because that can also build peace. Anything that builds bonds can build peace and break down walls. Second one is decide which public policies you want to impact that are focused on peace. Join coalitions that are working to impact policy in that area. Use your voice, use your energy to create change. Becoming engaged with peace-oriented policymakers and peace policy influencers, that's going to enable you to move from desiring peace to working to make it happen. As I'm wrapping this up, I want to encourage you to begin the journey to prioritizing peace within. It is a worthwhile journey. It's one that I stay on. I stay on it so that I can have that feeling of contentment and that feeling of joy that only peace brings. It's hard to be at peace with others and to create peace in the world if you're troubled within. Next step is think about what you're learning and how you're living. Are you taking in information that's in alignment with goals of peace? Are you demonstrating your personal desire for peace in your interactions with people who are markedly different from you? How are you living? And then there's action, 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 and more action. There are so many actions, big and small, that anyone can take to prioritize peace. Mahatma Gandhi said, "An eye for an eye will only make the world go blind." Let's all get laser focused on prioritizing peace in any way that we can. Thanks for listening to this podcast. I hope you got tools that you'll actually use and share. Subscribe if you haven't already. I add new and relevant leadership learning all of the time. If you haven't visited the Smichel Speaks YouTube channel, check it out. There's all sorts of new content. All of this is virtual leadership learning that will help you soar.